This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Green and White, the weekly Argyle Life podcast. With us this week, we've got Fim.
Hello.
And we've got Sam.
Hello.
And I'm your host, Nick. Well, let's start off with the latest news, which is 4 p.m. today, the day we're recording. Joe Edwards, 2-year contract announced. Fim, thoughts?
Yeah, solid. I'm pleased that he signed. Can show he, you know, can do it at this level, unless someone else comes in, I would imagine that he's probably captain for next season as well. So good news all round, really.
I mean, who are we signing that takes captaincy? You know,
it'd have to be a pretty
It's very rare to sign someone who becomes captain unless, I don't know, you brought them from an old team.
Yeah, I think we've only done it once in the lifetime that I've been a supporter, which was Carl Fletcher. And even then, he didn't become captain immediately because Sturridge tried to sign him in the summer. Doogood. Yeah, you're right. Because Doogood was because literally we had a massive squad overhaul that summer. You're right. Because I think Sturridge always said his signing was his captain was going to be a new signing because we had a absolutely massive overhaul. And there was, you know, mostly inexperienced players left apart from the goalkeepers. And obviously, by the looks of it, He wanted it to be Carl Fletcher, but he tried to sign Fletcher in the summer of 08, but obviously he couldn't sign Fletcher until much later, and it ended up being Doogood. But then obviously Fletcher took over the captaincy not long after he arrived. But yes, anyway, that's getting a bit off the point. Edwards almost certainly the captain. Yeah, sorry. Little Argyle 2008 history lesson there for our listeners. But anyway.
Wasn't that 2009?
No,
it was 2009 when Doogood signed.
No,
we signed Doogood 2009, didn't we? Did we really stay up a season with Carl Doogood?
We did.
Of course we did, because Graham Stack. Yeah, because Graham Stack. That wasn't that season, because it was the season after when we had Lario and Stockdale.
Yeah, that's right. It was Lario and Stack for 08-09, and then it was Lario and then for the first half of 09-10, it was Lario and Leveren, and then it was Lario and Stockdale second half of 09-10. But
Stockdale and Lario, more accurately.
Stockdale and Lario, well, true. Edward, yeah, very, very happy, very, very good.
Massively off track years. Here, aren't we?
We really are. Much of it is fun to have nostalgia over the worst era in the club's history. It's
before we go off the nostalgia train, Carl Doogood, that guy loved to score a big goal. Newcastle,
he's good.
Emirates Stadium,
there's
a few more, I'm certain.
He had one cruelly wiped off the record in the 4-1 last.
That was to take the lead, wasn't it? I remember.
He took the lead.
1-0 up and they got absolutely hammered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going down memory lane. God, that was... See, all those two seasons sort of blend into one in my head a bit, partly because it's now a decade back, more than a decade back. And partly, as you said, it's the start of a horrible run of, was it 6 seasons finishing in the bottom four?
Oh, God.
We were fourth bottom and survived by one place in 09. Then we were second bottom in 2010. Why did we come bottom? No, Peterborough beat us,
second
but they
bottom.
Were definitely, yeah. I remember losing to Peterborough on the last day. I just couldn't remember that put us bottom. So then we were, what, second bottom for 2011, third bottom 2012, third bottom 2013. Like
fourth bottom 2012 and 2013.
Close enough. I thought one was third, one was fourth.
No, I'm sure they were both fourth. I'm sure we came 21st.
I think that we were third bottom.
Nick, you want to argue with me? You sure on that?
Let's have a look. Hey, you may well be right.
If I remember, I think Barnett actually beat us both seasons, if I'm honest. Barnett and Halliday
went down. We were fourth bottom both times, right?
Thank you.
Let's see how close. I could have sworn. Yeah.
One of them was.
We were tied. We were tied with Barnett in 2012. We were higher on goal difference. And then by a point ahead of. Well, of course, I remember seeing that Dagenham had drawn or lost on the last day. That's how I knew we'd stayed up in 2013 before Barnett's result even came in. We really have digressed here.
Yeah.
Joe Edwards, very, very good. As I mentioned briefly on the last podcast, he kind of proved me wrong. I didn't think he would step up well. Basically, Joe Edwards has kind of had the season I expected Byron Moore to have, and Byron Moore's kind of had the season I expected Joe Edwards to have in a funny kind of way. And Edwards has had a very good season. And yeah, 2 years, it's good to have a bit of stability. It's going to be a absolutely huge overhaul this summer, probably the biggest overhaul since the summer of 2016, when we basically more or less signed a whole new side. And it's good to have some familiarity amongst players who have that done well for us, which Edwards is. Hopefully he'll be joined by Grant, and I would say hopefully Mayor, but only on the condition that his wages are much lower, as I mentioned. But yeah, certainly the first bit of good news. Obviously, the other news is Tomlinson as well. Very much imagine he'll be a bit part player at best, but worth noting he has also agreed to stay for another year.
Do you think, and it's hypothetical because I doubt he listens to this podcast, but I mean, just in general, say there are other people saying the same thing about Danny Meagher, that, you know, they wouldn't keep him on the same money. And say he saw some of those comments. Do you think that would change his, you know, that would impact this decision?
I don't think it should do, because I think ultimately managers are going to know a lot more about the finances.
He should ignore your opinion.
Well, I think managers are going to know a lot more about the finances and the budget available than we do. And, you know, even if he doesn't agree with my opinion, I should back him to make his own call. I would like to hope that he's already realised that we, you know, can't afford to be paying him a huge sum even before he hears anybody's opinion.
Well, hypothetically, because we don't know for certain.
Hypothetically, yeah. But if that is the case, that, you know, what he's rumoured to be on is true, then I think, obviously, you know, that's the kind of thing you'd hope he would realise without having to hear anybody's opinion. But who knows? Maybe we have just genuinely got an absolutely huge budget, which means we can kind of carry a couple of luxury players. And if that's the case, then obviously Ryan Lowe's going to know more about that than I am. So, what, you know, we'll wait and see until all of the signings have been made before we can judge for certain.
Look, the guy, I mean, I'll go off this because Danny Meagher doesn't do many interviews and he doesn't have social media, so you don't really have the kind of same. I'm not saying you know what the player's thinking on social media, but you kind of can, you know, if they put out a tweet or whatever, you kind of get the gist of how they're feeling about the club and things. And like, he did one interview before the whole game, I think it was, and he basically said, he was asked, you know, how do you think your season's gone, sort of thing. And he was like, well, the manager, you know, kind of likes me because he thinks that I get us up the pitch and I get us into space and things. But like, basically along the lines of, I would expect myself to do more and I've had an average season. That's what he said.
When was that of interest? Because I missed that.
It was about a week or two before the end of the season, wasn't it, Finn?
Reassures me to hear that, genuinely. I know that might have sounded sarcastic, but it does assure me to hear that, because I think some players it's football. We all know that a fair chunk of them are going to be up their own arse. Or maybe that's the harsh way of putting it, but essentially, you know, their own biggest fans, you know, and the ones who push themselves and go the furthest are going to be the ones who can understand when they haven't, you know, reached their potential. And that's a good thing to hear. It's a shame he won't apply the same lesson in terms of taking a bloody shot, but it's still good to hear.
Well,
he started to take shots more in the last kind of 3 months of the season, like around about the time that he scored against Lincoln. I do think he started to take more, but he just hit them straight into the defender, didn't he?
How many of them got blocked? All the time they get blocked, and it's just like, oh, another blocked shot. But yeah, I actually think in that interview, it'd be interesting to, you know, go back and look at it afterwards, but I'm pretty sure I remember him, I thinking, actually, you're being a bit too harsh on yourself here. Like, but I think that's...
I think average is a fair summary. He wasn't bad. He was below expectation, that's for sure. Particularly after scoring on the opening day, I think we all got our hopes up a bit that might herald a change in more goals from Mayer. I know you definitely said that, Sam.
Yes, that would hopefully lead to Mayer scoring a lot more goals. I think we all hoped that, and it certainly did not happen. Well, he doubled his goal tally from last season, so there is that. But he doubled it from 1 to 2. But
the season after that, 8.
But it's good.
If you keep it up,
he'll be on a 30-goal season within a few years. But anyway,
if we keep him here.
Go on, Finn.
If we keep him here till he's 40, we'll be at 20 goals a season.
It will be a lot more than that. It'll be about
256
goals a season at his current rate of doubling. Oh, it's good to see that Danny Mayer has now scored as many Argyle goals as Kellen Watts. He scored as many as Zach Rudden, as many as Anthony O'Connor.
The famous goal-scoring machine that is Zach Rudden. Zach Rudden.
We're being a bit mean. He did admit it himself. He really needs. If he does stay next season, blimey, he really needs to start adding some more goals. Because some of the players that he scored the same amount of goals as are a bit embarrassing to him, in all fairness. But yeah, he needs
kind of wish Ant reminded me of Zach Rudden, to be honest, just because, like, dear me.
Respect the guy. He scored against Cheltenham. That probably took us up.
From a yard and a half, wasn't it?
That was the points of the game. You've got to give him credit. It was a good late run. Poacher's finish. But he was rubbish. He was rubbish apart from that.
You're right in that that goal gave us the points of the game. On the other hand, we'd have won the bloody league on points per game. If he put away one of the two against Swindon, for example, we would have won the league on points per game.
Well, that's true, I suppose.
Can I just... you talk about that in terms of finishing. Now, I don't want to get too off track with the defence, because we all know that is the massive issue here, the defence in the midfield, defensive midfield, really. But chance creation, we've also missed a lot of chances this season. You know, again, and I'm not suggesting buy another striker, but surely there's something we can do to make
Finn,
sure...
It sounds to me like you're about to say buy another striker.
No, but I don't know what we can do. I don't think that buying another striker is necessarily going to solve it. I think that Hardy can do best. You can train Hardy to do better with his shots, take less touches, hit them more early, like Jeffcott does. Literally watch Jeffcott try and take shots. Like, just give him videos of Jeffcott and go, look, you don't have to strike the ball really clear. Not recently, but you know. But the way he hits the ball... You know, you don't have to strike it particularly cleanly, as long as you get them on target and you hit them early. And the same with Niall Ennis, he's got a really nice composed finish in him, but at the same time, it's really culpable of missing an absolute.
And yet he somehow is I think he's probably one miss of the season, didn't he?
Yeah,
there are a few bad words, but
that Accrington. Oh,
he had two. There was another one as well, didn't he? I'm certain there was another.
He missed against Sunderland, didn't he? In the last couple of games of the season.
Yeah,
I don't think that one was. I'm certain there's another awful one, but maybe I'm just.
But,
I thought it was like he completely missed. Oh no, maybe that was Sunderland where he just completely miskicked it for a tap in.
But yeah, well, whichever one it was. At the same time, he's got a really nice finish. I'm thinking of Oxford. I'm thinking of Bristol Rovers. We've seen that he can finish, but at the same time, he's really... And I understand they're League One level players, but had we been clinical on our shot conversion, we'd have probably been a couple of places higher, probably.
Oh, we'd have been more than a couple of places higher. We threw away a lot of points early in the season with bad finishing.
We did. And I don't think it really evened itself out. There were the odd couple of games that we got more than we should
it
have.
It did even itself out, Sam. For all the goals we didn't score, we threw a lot into our own net.
well, yes. But you know what I mean? There were a lot of games where where we said that we lost or drew and on chances we should have got more. There weren't many games where we won and obviously on chances we should have got beaten. I think Accrington away is the one I can think of. But, you know, that's probably the only one I can think of. I can't think of any others really at all. You know, pretty much all, apart from that game, all of the games we won because we were the better team and deserved to win. There were not a lot of kind of, you know, Derek Adams kind of ones where we sat deep, soaked up a lot of pressure, you know, rode our luck a bit and relied on good goalkeeping and then hit them on the counter. There weren't many wins like that.
Even when we sat deep, say, for example, against Sunderland and Portsmouth, they didn't necessarily create that much. Portsmouth had us under siege, but it was corners and...
And it was an error, and it was a big error by Watts that led to their first goal, and their second was just, I think, you know, a little bit of bad marking. But yeah, they didn't have us under siege at all. I think Sunderland barely created a chance all game apart from their goal. You know, they had a lot of the ball, had a lot of the territory, but that maybe there was a one-on-one first half. But again, they didn't create a lot.
Maybe,
you know,
there was a one-on-one first half. Yes, there was a one-on-one first half.
I kind of said maybe because I remember.
Maybe there was a one-on-one. Maybe Jeff got missed a tap in 1-0 against Rochdale.
They weren't under siege at all.
I was just going to say, actually, you know, we want, you know, I like when we play football well, we play it really well. I like watching it. I prefer watching it to sometimes that we were under Adams. But on the other hand, like, I just want to, well, maybe it'll come next season, but I'm not sure because we've got to have like a massive turnover. But anyhow, just be a bit more like, just get... We rarely seem to win under Lowe where we dug in and got results. Maybe a couple of times last season, I'm thinking Forest Green and Bolton in that same week and then Newport kind of stand out. But like, to be the best in this division, now I'm not expecting us to get automatic promotion next season, but that's where we're aiming, isn't it? To be the best in this division or any division in this, it's either Argyle have played well and got results this season, or they've played awfully and not got results.
Got absolutely battered.
Yeah, got absolutely battered. There's kind of no in between. So I would like us to find that in between a bit more. And he says he wants to bring in more experience, but that's easier said than done. And that, bringing in experience doesn't necessarily mean you're bringing in the right personnel, does it?
Like, the thing that I'm expecting is that we're going to go from one extreme to the other, which is we're going to go from a bunch of young players who are athletic, energetic, but lack, you know, in-game nous and communication, leadership, and make silly mistakes, to a bunch of players that don't make routine silly mistakes, that communicate well, but are not actually that amazing, because the only experienced promotion winners we can afford are either well past it or they were squad players. Like bit parters for big teams, so they're either going to be slow or not good. Now, I might be wrong, but let's face it, that's my initial take on that.
I hope he looks at Niall Canavan and goes, "That's the kind of defender I need. If I can get a slightly better version of Niall Canavan."
Finn, I'm just going to let you know, there might not be listening, but there is a big section on Twitter who probably heard that and thought, "What on earth are you talking about?"
Well,
they're like,
yeah, I mean, there is that.
For some people, Canavan is just Wootton.
That sums up a large strain of opinion, doesn't it? Like, because Canavan and Wootton both signed at the same time and they were both part of the same seasons, like, a lot of people do suddenly see them as the same player, which they're really not at all. Canavan, in all three of the seasons he was at the club, my mate Dan did a little graph of, not a graph, I'm thinking the wrong word, Excel table of points per game and goals conceded with Canavan in the team compared to not in all of the three seasons he was with us. And in all, you know, of course, there's other factors. This can't be 100% scientific, but in all three of the seasons, our goals conceded per game was significantly higher with him not playing, and our points per game were significantly better when he was playing. So it says that we conceded less goals and we got more points when he was playing. So whereas,
also,
you know,
I can go
really
further. We kept more clean sheets every time. It was the same for clean sheets, unsurprisingly, based on that, but yeah.
And I mean, not that, but if you just, I mean, it's apparent to me, maybe I look at football in a different way to, well, we all look at football in different ways, but like, you put Opoku, Wootton and Canavan up against each other and you go, Opoku's probably a better one-on-one defender than Wootton. Wootton's got more experience and probably you trust him a bit more to possibly communicate in bigger, pressure game situations. And then you just look at Canavan and I go, and this isn't a high bar, which is why I compared the three of them, but he is the best defender we've had since Sonny Bradley's left the club in that centre-back position, in my opinion.
I would agree with that for
then
sure.
Then between that, we
some
have...
Some would be saying that's a very, very, very low bar.
Yes. Yeah, but you get my point. But like, my opinion on Canavan is he's solid, right?
Should we move away from Canavan to more current issues, though? Jeff got rumours.
Oh, yeah, Jeff got... Yeah, load of Twitter toddler.
So, Sam, do you care to summarise?
Yeah, so there's a rumour going around Twitter that Jeff got requested to leave in January. Lowe said that he wasn't going to allow him to leave, and somebody basically put that rumour with the insinuation that that would explain Jeff Cott's big dip in form in the second half of the season. And to me, that just seems like a classic case of somebody like guessing what they think might have happened and then just painting that as being a valid source of in-the-know information. I could be wrong. Maybe it's totally genuine. But like, to me, that just seems like the kind of thing that like would neatly explain it, whereas the reality is often a lot more complicated. And like I said, I could be way wrong, but those are the rumours and I don't really think there's a lot to it personally. I have heard from a fairly well-connected source that we didn't receive any bids for Jeff Cott in the January window. Now, again, that might be the case that, you know, we didn't receive any bids because Lowe had made it already clear that you know, any potential bids would be rejected. That's always a possibility. So I could be totally wrong, but I don't believe that turn of events is the truth at all. I think it's putting two and two together and making five.
I was just going to say, like, just a caveat to that. And I know we're early in the window, but the only player we've been linked to currently is a striker. And I'm thinking, well, Paul Mullin, great, top scorer last season, great, right? But current issues I talked about Canavan, for example. The reason I talked about Canavan was the need for centre backs. But yeah, anyway,
But the reason you only get that link is because people kind of don't care about rumours about centre-backs and defenders. The vast majority of all rumours out there are about attackers.
Very true.
So, of course,
I'm happy if we're keeping a less leaky ship at Argyle, because there's so many leaks over the years that there's been. And, you know, when it's market forces, when other clubs hear that someone is in for a player, that makes them more likely to, you know, to up their bid a little bit to a level we can't afford, or to, you know, swoop in if they may have thought they had a bit more time to make the signing. So I'm happier that less stuff gets leaked out of Argyle these days. And ultimately, the more that's in the public domain, the better strategic advantage that is for competitor clubs. So I'm happy.
Do you think we'll get a repeat of, I'm not going to say the name of the person on trial, but this is how old he is, the club he supported when he was growing up, the academy he came through, which foot he is, where he plays, the last three clubs he played for, anything like that again?
Yeah, his name, date of birth, last four digits on his card number, mother's maiden name. But no, I don't. Hopefully we're not going to see a repeat of that from Ryan Lowe. He said he wasn't going to name player. For context, for anyone not listening, he said he wasn't going to name player.
Oh, no, you need to sum up the context. If you don't know, you don't know. It was last year. It was pretty damn recent.
All those clues that led Argyle fans to work out who it was. But yeah, we
within about 30 minutes. It was a solid 30 minutes between Ryan Lowe's article being published being like, I'm not going to name names because I'd want to deter bids, to everybody working out who it was.
Yeah, I mean, the player ended up on loan in the conference, so maybe, you know, there weren't too many bids to be deterred.
No, he's in League 2. He was on loan from
Harrogate, the Notts County.
He was Harrogate, yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to name him just because there might be someone who's listening who doesn't know, and you've got a fun little game to go play, but it won't take you long.
No, it won't. Going back to Jeff Cott,
if true, which, like I say, I think I said the same thing as you before you had seen that we were talking about it, that I... Well, I'm not saying it's not true, but fundamentally it seems easier for it to have just been a someone putting two and two together and just wanting to try to put a bit of attention. But if true, then I'd say it reflects very negatively on Jeffcott a year on from, because let's face it, Ryan Lowe has largely made his career. Obviously, Jeffcott's gone on to score, and he's obviously, you know, you can't just be like, if it weren't for Ryan Lowe, you wouldn't be around. But at the end of the day, if he was playing in a Derek Adams team and we're playing hoofball, his career has gone very different. If we got a different manager who didn't create endless chances for him, put him in a good goal scoring position, it'd be different. If we had a manager who wasn't willing to start a young striker who's just been recalled from the National League, it's below the National League Southie is playing, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was Southern Division, wasn't it?
Yeah, Southern
Division. So it says, like, none of us, I remember when we recalled Jeffcott, I thought, well, fine, I remember saying, what's the point if he's just going to sit on the bench? He pulled him straight in, he started him, he scored two goals, he gave him his chance, he's made him a better player. Like, if it were true that Jeffcott was annoyed at having to go an extra 6 months without leaving the club, and more importantly, leaving the club at a time when, yeah, we could have easily gone and spiralled and been relegated. If we'd picked up a handful of fewer points in the season, we'd have been in big trouble. I just think it wouldn't have reflected well on him at all if he threw his toys
out
of the pram.
And also, not only that, it wouldn't have been good, if it is true, which again, I don't think the minute is, it wouldn't be good pragmatically, because his best way of getting a big move in the summer would be to continue putting the strong level of effort in and continuing to score the goals. So, no, exactly. I don't think it's that at all. I think it's far more likely, as the boring, simple explanation, that players are never quite as good as the biggest hype merchants think they are when they're in good form, but equally they're never as bad as the biggest doomsayers think they are when they're in bad form. Players have ebbs and flows of form. He had a very good first half of the season. He had a pretty poor second half of the season. And you'd hope next season he will either... one of two things will happen. He'll either A, level out somewhere in between, or B, he will just be one of those streaky players that has long good runs, then long bad runs. And I think either of those outcomes are very possible. It could be, obviously, the other two potential outcomes are one extreme or the other. He could genuinely be as good as he was, you know, for that spell or season. Or he could, God forbid, be as bad as he was after January or season. If that's the case, we could be looking at releasing him, never mind selling him. But I don't think either of those two things will happen. I think far more likely it will be in between. I think he'll either level out at a consistent level or he will be a streaky player. And I'm not quite sure which, but I think it'll be one of those two. And well, I'm just glad we got him, almost certainly going to have him for another season. I don't think these rumours have got any truth. And if we have him for another season, at least it's another season of having a local academy talent come through and hopefully do well.
Moving then on from Jeffcott is what we're going to spend a bit of time talking about, which was the soul-sapping nature of iFollow.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you can hear my soul being sapped from my voice as I think about it. And to be fair, iFollow, we shouldn't take iFollow for granted. If this season, if COVID had happened 10 years ago, what would we have done? Everything would have been behind closed doors.
Yeah, like, listen to the radio.
There wasn't the infrastructure in place, was
there?
Yeah,
but back in those days, it was Argyle. Was it Argyle Player, as it was called then, or was it Argyle World? It might even have been Argyle World 10 years ago. I think Argyle
10 years ago was Player. Certainly it was.
Okay, you're probably right actually, but it would have been Argyle Player that certainly didn't have live streams. So yeah, if COVID had happened 10 years ago,
it was 4 minute highlights package.
Yeah, 4 minutes. I mean, I dare say they probably would have extended the highlights package a bit, but like, yeah, we certainly wouldn't have had live streams, I don't think. And it probably would have to be a case of making do with the radio commentary, as it were, and then just having a highlight stream at the end of the game. And obviously, you know, we moan about iFollow, but in that respect, thank goodness for iFollow, because if COVID had happened a bit longer ago, we wouldn't have had any way to really see the games or make
not so long ago a... though. Not so long ago. I mean, this infrastructure wasn't in place 5 years ago, let alone 10.
No, you're true.
We really aren't talking about a big gap here. If you've been supporting the club for say 60 years, like that 5 years between when we wouldn't have been able to do this and watch every game live, albeit having to pay for it, but still having the option.
Mm.
You know, like I say, so we should be very grateful that we had iFollow. And it's not iFollow's fault that it's not the same as being in the stadium. But at the same time, an entire remote season, I felt totally, by the end, I felt totally disconnected. And of course, that was in large part to do with the utterly awful way we finished the season.
It was a mixture of that.
And then was also the schedule. It was the fact that we played so many Saturday Tuesday to make up for, you know, the lag, that you miss one game and then it almost felt like a chore to keep up. Or if you broke the habit, it just made it easier to not watch the next one.
Yeah, completely agree with that. Were any of the I don't think we were any of the three of us in the lucky 2000 that got to see those three games in December or not? I don't think we were.
No,
Fraser and Luke, wasn't it?
I think Fraser the only person.
Lot, yeah.
Yeah, Fraser. Yeah, yeah. Fraser and Luke were the only two people that, for, you know, from the Argyle Life group that managed to get in.
Hey, on didn't Colin go? I distinctly remember Colin moaning.
Yeah, no, you're right, Colin did.
But Colin because he said about having to
basically said he wished he couldn't, he wished he didn't have to.
Yeah. To be honest, there was only three games. Right. So
the three, what were the three? Is Ipswich?
Ipswich, Milton Keynes and Oxford.
I didn't realise you saw them in for Oxford.
And yeah, Rochdale, actually. Rochdale, no? No.
Rochdale
was before. It was the day before.
Okay. So got you. So watch. So Milton Keynes, Oxford, and Ipswich, right? So, but I remember saying, like, right, great, everybody got to go back to football, amazing, but like we were still in. I mean, we are still in a pandemic now, but we were a lot further back down the line then, and although it was a very short-lived thing, but I remember thinking this is going to be a very short-lived thing, and I think actually, although it was only three games, by the end of it, people got fed up of having to queue. I talked to my neighbour who's an Argyle fan, and he just said, you know, it's just not the same, basically. So I think a lot of the consensus was, yeah, great, we got to go back, but it's not how it should be, you know?
I remember also Fraser saying that it was cold, because with that big gap between everyone, and it being winter...
Yeah.
It was absolutely freezing, and it rained for one of the games, as I remember.
And you had to
I would like to put my hand up and pat myself on the back for being, I think, the only one in Argyle Life who correctly predicted that fans wouldn't be in throughout the entire season and that the 2000 thing would be over very, very quickly.
Yeah, you did on both those things. Like I mentioned in the podcast last week, I kind of, you know, fell into the hype of believing that because cases were going down, they'd continue to, and we wouldn't have a second wave. Obviously, that was completely not the case. We did have a bad and virulent second wave, worse than the first one, in fact. And obviously, that, you know, it was such a weird time, by the way, to have that 2K, because that was when we were right in the heart of the second wave, really. If you were going to do it, you'd have thought maybe do it from kind of September or October, but obviously by that point, it was
after the second wave. There was a big, big drop initially. And then it picked right back up again very quickly.
I mean,
depends if you define it as a third wave or not, or whether you'd say it's like
it was a third wave because it was the Kent variant. That was what started it. The whole reason the third wave was almost entirely, well, not entirely, but it was very significantly driven by a new, highly infectious variant of COVID, the Kent variant, which meant that everything sped up.
Must say that also. Vaccines weren't really on the horizon then, so you know it was all
they'd actually just been approved before the Oxford, I think it was by the MK Dons game, they were just about to be approved,
right?
But they weren't in production, they were nowhere near being actually delivered.
Sure. I can actually give you this fact exactly. The first ever vaccine went into someone's arm on December the 7th, but that was Pfizer. AstraZeneca didn't get approved until much later in the year, and it was obviously very low numbers at that time as well. But
that early? I honestly thought the first one went in January, albeit it was still low numbers for the first month and a half.
So the overall point is three games, you know, people had to turn up 45 minutes early in the freezing cold or the rain. And wait, and then you'd have to, you know, be basically, by the sounds of it, wait in a massive queue and ushered into the toilets, you know, one by one, and then like, so it's like, you know, it's just, it's an experience somewhere close to football, but nothing like.
I was going to say, was that a description of the football Argyle were playing? Ushered into the toilet.
Oh, well, maybe. That would be an accurate description, because we were going for a bad run then and MK Dons broke it, if I remember. So, basically, hopefully, this time, going back to the overall subject of why I follow, Argyle have now, partnered with a company who have allowed them to develop their own streaming service for next year. But fingers crossed, I hope that there won't be much use for many of us to need to use it.
No, quite. No, absolutely. We don't want to have another season like we had. I mean, you know, the actual nature of iFollow, I think it was mostly fine. The actual streaming, you know, the stream quality was good. I think the the commentary was variable, I will say. It depended who it was. Some definitely better than others. The camera angles, I have to say, really kind of bugged me. That like we randomly would have a zoom in on a player just as they're about to take a shot from 25 yards, and the never-ending replays would then, and then we'd come back and find the ball had hit the post or something like that. But the camera work.
The example we were thinking of was, we were watching a replay of something, then we came back to find that Ipswich were clean through. when we're pretty certain this was it. When a poker had given it away or failed to make a simple interception or something like that, is when Nameson came charging back and made like a fantastic last man block.
That's right.
But just I follow out of nowhere, cuts to Ipswich clean through. It's like, oh, fantastic.
Yeah, that's right. It was done.
Why do I need to see four different angles of a...
Why do we need to see
a shot that's gone into the dem point?
Worse. There were examples where we saw like multiple replays of like a soft free kick being given while the ball's in play, or a corner being given. You know, like, well, I don't need a single replay of that. I pay to watch the game, not endless replays.
And we're all using our you know, it's a cliche, but our hard-earned money, 10 quid on this. Yeah, we're getting to watch our team, but it's just not, you know, it's like, I've missed that half of like a move when I've been watching the same replay like 57 times. Exaggeration, but you get the point.
Yeah, it's really not great on that from that point of view. But the it was reliable. I think the biggest fear everyone had is that something would go wrong. Something would
Parkway.
Whereby they basically lost the stream about 20 minutes into the game and never got it back again.
No, but then don't forget the first 10 minutes. I think it started late, didn't it? They couldn't get it up on time. It was there for 5 minutes or some 10 minutes, something like that. The first 5 minutes of that, it sounded like someone was talking from the bottom of the ocean or something like that. And then they left the microphone on over half time. You could hear some club staff chatting away or something like that, as I remember.
Yeah, that happened at the end of the Accrington game as well, the game where we won 1-0 up at their place in February, and it cut the full time, and they left the camera running, and you could just hear John Coleman giving the players an absolute rollicking from, I presume, the Accrington dressing room, must have been near to where the camera was positioned. You could hear it over him, and you could really hear it was his voice as well. He's got a very distinctive sort of Scouse accent, and you could hear him ranting and raving away about how they'd been too soft, how they'd not taken their chance, and it was great.
Really doesn't measure up though to John Sheridan chatting at Brett Pittman. If there's one amazing thing that iFollow gave us, it's being able to clearly hear some of the interactions between players and managers. Was he shouting at Pittman again? Brett Pittman!
I think that was it. It was just he was shouting his name repeatedly, but there were a couple of
the other ones. The other one is hit. The other one is hit the target. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, hit a tag.
Where are you going?
The other one was you were telling what don't even know the name of their player, but he basically told one of their players to run harder, Swindon's players to run harder, and he's like, "What do you want me to do?"
I know what you mean. It actually wasn't quite that. He was having to go at the player for running too fast, and he said, "Slow down! You're going at 200 mile an hour. Slow down!" And then the player
got back to him. What on earth is that?
What do you expect me to do? And then to which he just was like, "Oh, you know, you dopey dickhead."
We can't say, I have to censor that now, you crap. I was going to say, so the other one was, so they've got us, he goes, Brett Pittman. I just love he shouts Brett Pittman as though, like, how many Bretts were on the pitch? Brett Pittman, where are you going? Just stand. Effing. See what you're going to do? Effing unbelievable. Just, oh, dear.
It's great. And, let's not forget the Ryan Lowe one after Opoku sending off against Sunderland. Hands! That one, your fault!
Stop swearing! It takes me like 2 minutes.
I said effing.
Thank God. It takes me like 2 minutes to censor him.
I said effing.
I still love that, though. He's absolutely right, though, I'll try to add. Absolutely spot on. It was all camera's fault. But yeah, the other thing was, did you say already, Sam, camera angles?
Yeah, camera angles were a bit weird, weren't they?
I had this fancy new camera, you know, studio, or recording studio, I suppose. Not a recording studio, but editing studio or suite, whatever. But then also to go with that, all these new fancy camera angles. And there was just a 4 or 5 game period where it's like, we're going to show the worst camera angle possible. It's the one that you'd never use if you're playing FIFA, for example. But we're going to use it because it looks cool and no one else has it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Very much how it felt.
I think our goal at the start of last season, they announced that they had this new, or maybe it was a universal iFollow thing, but like this new 4-angle camera setup, and I think because they ended up being automated and there was no one really, you know, controlling them, you just get the 4th angle of the shot showing nothing or whatever it was, you know. So it just became a bit, it was just, I'd rather have, I think, like, maybe Rochdale only had one camera and one person that was genuinely,
but most places did. We were one of the rare ones. Pompey had multiple angles, we had multiple angles. There were some, like Charlton, for example, they have multiple angles. I'm not sure we saw it in iFollow, because I think iFollow records separately to Valley Pass, which run theirs.
Yeah,
not sure, but they have multiple angles.
But can I? Yeah, and on that topic, actually, the couple of games where we had that mini FA Cup run on FA Player was such a breath of fresh air at the time. And it was free. It was free as well.
Well, one of them was on FA Player, one of them was on BBC iPlayer. But yeah, it was, and I think
that's it.
Certainly, commentary certainly on FA Player was, with all due respect to the Radio Devon commentary.
Of which none is afforded.
What I will say for the commentary is I do think the iPlayer commentary, I do think it got better after Robert Nichols started doing it, more so than when we were using the Radio Devon guys, in all fairness. I think Drew Savage, who does the away games, was good, but I think the guy who did the home game, I'm sure he's a lovely guy, and I do apologise if you're listening, but I wasn't a big fan of the Radio Devon guy who did the home games at all. I thought he was quite dull, and he would kind of ramble off on tangents quite a lot, which arguably I'm doing, which is ironic. But yeah, I wasn't a big fan.
I mean, I'll be honest, Sam, I'm not sure you're ever going to be invited on for co-coms.
Well, no, quite. But I do think it stepped up a bit when Rob McNichols started doing it, and that's to their credit. And I guess if the... you know what? I don't think anyone has ever matched up to Gordon Starks and probably ever will. Just pay what's needed to get him out of retirement, please. Just pay what's needed to get him.
Controversial opinion. I never actually loved his Sparksy's commentary. It wasn't bad. Just I never thought
you are now excommunicated from the Argyle fan base, Nick.
I'm not saying, like I say, it wasn't bad. It never was that like amazing for me.
Oh, I love it.
I'll tell you what, it's definitely the best I've ever had for listening to Argyle, but that's more because of how crap everything else has been since.
He did have the luxury of being the main commentator in a very good era, didn't he? That was the thing.
And a very bad one as well, because
I thought you were going to say commentator. joining the dark side.
I really enjoyed Gordon Sparks, and to be honest with you, it's a very difficult job to be a commentator, I think, to continually keep up with the play and things. But I really enjoyed Gordon Sparks' commentary. One that stands out for me is when obviously I was in the ground that day, and we all know what happened when Peter Hartley scored in the last minute. But I just remember coming back into the car, turning on the radio because
I did like that, the
pre-match report, the post-match report, and like because of the noise in the ground, I won't do a demonstration of it because it will just mess up the podcast. But basically, Gordon Sparks's voice became a muffled shouting, like blah 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 sort of noise, and then like just this sea of just noise like in the background, like you couldn't hear him. It was great.
What I wouldn't give for that day again.
Yeah, that was some heck of a day. But I follow.
Just give me that 10 minutes back. You know, that 10 minutes is what I'd take it.
I blacked out on when Peter Hartley scored for about.
Did someone accidentally smash you in the face? It wouldn't surprise me. There were arms all over the place.
No, because I was sat in the bottom of the Lyndhurst. So, but I couldn't believe it. And I probably just don't remember it. The first thing I remember is seeing Carl Mickey's face, and he's just doing like circuits around the pitch, and he's just like swearing. You can't believe it. Is yeah.
The face that I love the most is Mark McNulty's. You can really see the hope drain in his eyes. It's beautiful.
Oh yeah.
The other one that was fantastic, it was Ender Stevens. He, because here's what Hartley's header rebounded off. That was just fantastic player going to play Premier League. Not surprised at all. That was sumptuous.
Ryan Alsop as well. Thanks for that flat, mate.
Oh, he's got his hands on his head. I can picture him. I think he's rolling on his back in the net with his hands on his head.
I want to raise Paul Cook's face when it cuts to Paul Cook on the touchline. That's a cracker as well.
I just want also quickly, we're talking about commentary. Big props. I actually really, really love the commentary that I can't remember the radio station does it, but for Pompey. If you watch Pompey's highlights, they always, on YouTube, they always put that commentary over it. I love the guy who does it. And
Pompey Fan TV, basically, isn't it?
I don't think it's Pompey Fan TV. I think it's their version of Radio Devon, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure it probably is. But I just mean they're such Pompey fans, aren't they? They get so carried away, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But honestly, like the line he used when Hartley scored, Polaxed at the death. Love that. Playoff dreams die in Devon or something like that. Honestly, like I actually prefer his commentary, partly because, again, I can hear the desperation in his voice. But well, I just
iconic,
do genuinely
Gary
like
Weaver, Sky TV commentary. Many have only seen it on TV before, and they'll be painting Wembley green and white at the end of May. That's just a classic Sky Sports view of us Plymouthians, isn't it?
It is kind of Mad Libs, isn't it? It's Mad Libs. It's just filling the details.
Many have only seen it on TV before.
I love how they like Sky, like they pretend to care about Argyle, and then when we're on TV, and it's just like, because they know that about 30,000 other people in the country are probably watching this game who aren't Argyle or Portsmouth fans.
I
remember as well that playoff campaign. We were the side story. The three stories were Pompey climbing back up the table, Accrington Stanley defying the odds, and AFC Wimbledon with their history. Literally, we barely got a mention. We were definitely the ones that they weren't particularly interested in the story.
AFC Wimbledon as well, obviously, because they're a fan-owned club, which, you know, and
mostly the general story of Wimbledon as well, the general story of Wimbledon rising through the
climbing back to the league. Yeah. It was not the league they're in when they were basically dissolved.
Yeah.
Effectively. But although it started a while before that, but yeah.
So I know, you know, Wimbledon is a great story, but when you're an Argyle fan, like,
it was quite, you know, any other team they'd beaten, I'd have been glad to see Wimbledon have that success story, but not when it's your own team. But I follow. That was the podcast meant to be about I follow, but kind of ended up becoming a bit of a general ramble and chat about everything, which was always nice. And we can only hope two things: one, that the Argyle streaming site's a lot better, and two, that we never have to use it.
Yeah, well, no, because I'll still have to for like Tuesday games.
Yeah, hopefully that most of us.
I
still appreciate it. Just dribs and drabs. I don't want it to be every 3 days paying £10. I can't wait for the first game back. I'm going to say right now, I don't care where it is. I'm going to make every effort I can to go, and inevitably I won't. It's gonna if we end up, I do really want to. try and tick off some stadiums I've not been to. Like, I didn't go to Sunderland last time. I'm presuming they're not going up. It'd be sad if they do. But if they don't go up, then I'm going to try my best to get to the Stadium of Light. Hopefully it's not on a Tuesday, because that's just going to be awkward as hell.
I mean, I was excited for Soltesh United announced that they're doing they're kind of doing a friendly at the same time within Argyle 11 with Tavistock in July, and I bought those tickets straight away, and they came through the post today, and I just, like, I wouldn't usually be so excited, but any sort of remnants of Argyle on a football pitch and just going to watch it
I kind of hope that people, because it's the first game back that we've seen, people take it like insanely seriously and like celebrate like it's a genuine like League One game.
I will.
You know, the standard goal. Like goal kick, you know, someone takes goal kick and say, like, "Ooh, you're shit." That kind of stuff. Love it.
I think, yeah, I think it'll be really quite emotional.
I can't wait. And I think
I think people will be drunk and won't actually give it any kind of thought like that, to be honest.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Depends on the Tuesday evening game or a Saturday game, I suppose, how much liquor has had time to sink in by that time.
Should we actually go for a quick prediction of what the opening day will be? I'm going to go away. I'll go for away to Newport if they're promoted. Otherwise, I'll say it's going to be... I'm certain it's going to be away, because we always seem to get a flaming away. I mean, this season being one of the few examples, we always seem to be away.
Yeah, we do. I'm going to say, just because this has got a real first game of the season vibe about it, away to Fleetwood.
Just to go, no, it won't be Fleetwood. It's always one that's relatively close. The August games, they always try to go for the closer teams.
You know, I'd never noticed that,
but we did have Blackpool. Obviously, it wasn't great this season. But then that might have been because they didn't factor that in because of fans.
Away to Crewe as well is an exception.
Yeah, like I say, in general, they do try to keep them closer. It's just the problem for us is none of them are ever done. None of them are close at all.
No offense to Shrewsbury Town, but I think we're going to go something boring like away to Shrewsbury.
I'm not going to lie, Shrewsbury was the other one I was thinking of, but could you imagine away to Cheltenham or away to Wickham opening day?
Give me a home game against anybody or a mega away game at that, you know, Sheffield Wednesday or Sunderland or somebody like that. Make it an absolute spectacle. It will be a spectacle in itself.
Away to Rotherham.
I mean,
away to Accrington, first day.
Yeah,
that's the worst as well, because there's only so many fans can get in.
Yeah, that wouldn't be great.
Wherever it is, hopefully it will be one to remember, just because we haven't done it for such a long time.
Could be a way to Gillingham in that death trap of an away end.
Isn't it usually looking like it's going to fall down every second of the day?
I'm not going to lie, when we were there, we lost 3-1 at the end of the 19 season. Ladapo opened the scoring. It's another hammer in the, another nail in the coffin. When Ladapo scored, I genuinely didn't feel that safe as that thing started to wobble a bit.
Yeah.
It is so much of an afterthought in that stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, new ground would be nice.
Which one away, sorry?
Wimbledon away for their new ground.
Yeah, true. I think I'm going to go for Wickham away. I think it's written in the stars we have to face Wickham away. Yeah, and
I'm going Shrewsbury, and Sam's going...
Fleetwood. I'm going to stick with my guns on Fleetwood, just the vibe I get.
Yeah.
All right. So we've managed to end with a prediction. Then next week is going to be our aim for the end of season quiz. And we'll see you then, hopefully. Thanks you all so much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.